Hello, everybody. Welcome to Honey Badger Radio. My name is Brian, and this is, well, this is This Week in Me Too. So I want to welcome you guys to the show. My name is Brian, and I'm here with our special guests, Ichigo and Anime Moon. Ichigo is a convention executive. He works on several conventions of various sizes, some larger, some medium size across the country. And Anime Moon is also a person who works with conventions. And full disclosure, Anime Moon also writes articles for HBR. And this is how, you know, they kind of met each other, was through the convention scene, and he managed to bring him on. And we're going to be talking about the Vic Mignogna situation. Get some sort of behind the scenes info from people that work in the convention scene. And maybe like talk a little bit about some newer revelations that have been made regarding the Vic Mignogna case. So, but I want to ask you guys before we get started, hit the like button. And if you're not subscribed, subscribe now so you don't forget. And in addition, tell me, what's the name of the stream? It should be The Week in Me Too. But on my end, it's telling me it's called HBR Talk number 78, which is last week's show. And that shouldn't be the case. But I just want to make sure that that's right. So anyway, that being said, thanks, guys, for coming on the show. And I guess I just want to give everyone who might not know a bit of a refresher course on the recent events around Vic Mignogna. So can you guys, any one of you, can you give us a bit of a, you know, catch everybody up on the story?
Yeah, I got this. For the quick preliminary summary, Vic Mignogna, who's a prolific voice actor, various animated works over the span of 20 some odd years, including several iconic and beloved roles, from the names of Edward Elric from Fullmetal Alchemist, Tamaki Suo from Oron High School Host Club, to most recently being the primary English actor of the titular character of Broly from the recent Dragon Ball Super movie. Following the massive $30 million plus success of that film, an astounding record-breaking success within North America, he had multiple allegations of sexual misconduct levied at him after one Mars girl, also known as Caitlin Saucedo, made the suggestion for the Kick Vic hashtag following an Anime News Network article by editor Lindsay Loveridge. Anime News Network, while claiming to be the most trusted source, is also known for its affiliations with staff at AnimeFeminist.com, which is a site I've debunked multiple times in the past. As the situation ramped up, voice actresses Monica Rial and Jamie Margie made their own allegations against Mignogna, with the backing of other mainstays of the industry, such as Sean Schimmel, who voices Goku, Christopher Sabat, who voices Vegeta, Piccolo, and others, and who have always had a disdain towards the conservative Christian due to temperament towards the born-again evangelical types that they feel are disingenuous.
So, for the record, I'm just going to restate what you just said. The theory is, or the idea is, that a lot of Vic's sort of co-workers in the on the Dragon Ball Z cast or Dragon Ball Super cast or whatever you want to call it, don't like Vic because he is an evangelist, sort of born again Christian, conservative Christian. Is that right?
That's the idea.
Okay. And I assume there aren't many voice actors that are openly conservative Christian types, are there?
A vast majority are not.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Go on. I'm sorry to interrupt.
That's fine. As this story has built up over the month of February, Mignogna obtained representation by business litigators from Beard, Harris, Bullock, and Hughes in Texas. After deputizing Minnesota attorney Nick Riccata of Riccata Law, who has also been covering these events alongside a slew of other YouTube creators, to start a GoFundMe to the tune of $100,000, which was met within the span of about 2 weeks. This has since been updated to a $200,000 goal, which you see on the screen here, to adapt for the growing scale of the case in question. And as you can see, it's now at $121,000 plus. And this comes despite multiple attempts to discredit not just Mignotta, but Riccata, Vic's legal team, and any soul daring to back the embattled 56-year-old. And that sets the stage.
Okay. Now, we've done a lot of stories about Vic. I mean, we even talked just this week. We talked about KameaCon and how the story goes, if I remember correctly, just like the short version is KameaCon is a sort of the Dragon Ball specific convention. So it's just about Dragon Ball. And they get voice actors that do voices on the show on, you know, usually to meet fans and sign autographs and do panels and all that. And the folks, the usual suspects like Monica Rial and these people who are in the Kick Vic crowd, which are essentially the voice actors that don't want him to have a job anymore or have a livelihood, and they certainly don't want to be around him. They were applying a lot of pressure to KameaCon to disinclude or disinvite Vic from coming. And KameaCon went along with it, or they went ahead and did that. And then they changed their mind and they said, look, you know, this is these conventions. They're not about politics. They're not about your personal feelings. They're about the fans. So we're going to invite him anyway. And then right after that, a whole bunch of these Kick Vic voice actors essentially backed out and said they're not going to go to KameaCon, and essentially they declined to show up, which of course hurts the fans more than anything because they were hoping to see all of their favorite voice actors. Is that about right?
And there's a little extra information there as well that's pretty interesting. What has come forth from anonymous sources, the head of KameaCon had dropped Mignotta after getting harassed about it by Monica Rial and Christopher Sabat directly, allegedly, using an extortionist threat of the pullout and taking their fans with them.
Oh, that's right. Yes. She offered to do a different kind of meetup with them outside of KameaCon. That's correct.
Yeah.
I'd like to chime in on this, actually.
Yes. Yeah. Go ahead, please.
So, again, I'm part of a lot of social circles with different convention staff. We use those social circles to talk about problems and how we deal with them. It's been sort of rumored that KameaCon had a contract with Vic that didn't have a clause in it that would allow them to cancel because of controversy, and that their hands were forced in the matter. However, I've not heard KameaCon comment on the matter in these social circles, even though supposedly they do have staff amongst them. So I can't really verify that, though, but I do know that there is a contract involved and that their contract didn't have that clause.
Go on.
In addition to that, the running narrative is that KameaCon was forced to have Vic, supposedly, even though they didn't want to have him because of the controversy. I don't know if that's because of them siding with the Kick Vic crowd or if it's because they just didn't want to deal with the headaches and problems and drama. But I heard that there were threats of lawsuits, and because of that, KameaCon had to reinvite, or not really reinvite, but reinstate their invitation to Vic. But again, I can't confirm that. I've not heard anything from KameaCon staff on what their opinions are on the matter or their official stance on the subject. aside from what's been posted on Twitter, of course.
Okay. All right. And, well, actually, so we're all caught up on the most recent news. So I guess while I got you, Ichigo, could you tell me from your perspective, from what you know, what are some things about this Kick Vic thing that maybe the average person doesn't know? Maybe some additional info you have from the convention scene perspective or whatever.
Well, to summarize, it's been very divisive. There's a lot of people embittered by this, very similar to the Gamergate debate. I'm sure most of you are aware of that. And that is carried over into the convention executive and convention staff crowds. There are a lot of people, myself included, who have chosen to not pick a side until a trial occurs and we have some sort of official statement. That's most of what conventions are saying on the outside, but on the inside, there are people taking sides regardless of what evidence they have,
mm-hmm.
Or maybe something I'm not seeing. But really, in terms of things that you may not be seeing is, in my opinion, in the social circles that I am a part of, the anti-Vic crowd is slowly gaining ground, and that's obviously not good because we don't have decisive evidence if Vic did what he was accused of. And to jump this gun is not spelling good for conventions in the Western world.
And how do you know that they're gaining ground? Are you just seeing people becoming a little bit more vocal on the inside, or as you just see more and more people are sort of, you know, becoming convinced, or what is it?
It's precisely that. I'm seeing people become a lot more vocal on the matter, and I can't say that any posts or any comments in these groups that are pro-Vic or pro-center, as in neutral or impartial stance, I can't say that these posts are being deleted, but they are being met with a lot of antagonism.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really kind of frightened me to even talk about the subject because, again, I'm impartial. And we've seen this on the forefronts of a lot of our social media groups. Our convention, the one I primarily focus at, took a stance of neutrality. And on the social media group, the anti-Vic crowd got very, very vocal and I would almost say bullying us. And it was mm-hmm. a nasty debacle that I'm happy that is now in the past. It's kind of blown over now, though. But I'm kind of disappointed in some of my fellow staffers for wanting to enable this by appealing more to them. But at the same time, we do have the job of the monumental task of having to appeal to both the anti-Vic and the pro-Vic crowds to ensure everybody still has a fun time at our conventions, despite the drama that's going on.
Yeah. Now, I apologize for playing devil's advocate, but I just want to make sure that we're thorough. So what, how do you know that this, because I think it's very concerning that this is happening, if what you're saying is true. Yes, it does harken back to Gamergate, where there were people who are just willing to believe based on either they just have a propensity to believe women because they're ideologically possessed and they just go along with the victim narrative, or, you know, they're just, it's one of those things where they just hear the accusations either from multiple people or they just hear the same ones repeated over and over and over until, you know, it kind of like it breaks past their ability to remain impartial. And they just say, OK, well, if I'm hearing it this much, it must be true. And they just kind of like go along with it. But I guess what I'm wondering about is how would you know if – thank you, Sad Otaku, for subscribing. How would you know that this is in fact a growing sentiment amongst people in the – let's say in the convention, you know, sort of like executives slash back, you know, behind the scenes or the organization's staff themselves, or if it's just like a really vocal minority of people, which is a common, and I bring this up because I hear this a lot where, you know, people, and I think they're being dismissive most of the time when they say, oh, SJWs, they're just a very loud, vocal minority of weirdos, and they don't actually make up, that, you know, the majority of regular people. And if regular people just, you know, if they spoke up, then they would find out just how small a minority it is. So that's why I'm asking.
Okay, well, actually, I have a lot to talk about on this.
Okay.
Regarding the most recent controversy, I think a lot of the people that are siding with the Kick Fix may have, you know, more of a personal stake. They know someone that was involved or an accuser directly, and, you know, they're their friends, so they want to believe them as much as possible to offer support.
And when you say the most recent controversy, are you talking about something specifically within the Kick Fix thing that we haven't mentioned, or are you talking about, like, KameaCon or something?
I'm talking about the entire controversy regarding Vic's accusations as a whole.
Oh, okay, the whole thing. All right, go on. I'm sorry. So you're saying that they're the accusers, a lot of the people that are on the Kick Vic side, they're friends with people who've made accusations, or, you know, or there's, like, a connection there.
Yes. Okay. And it's sort of a human nature thing, you know? I mean, you have friends telling you that, oh, this person did this awful things. And you want to believe them because they're your friend, basically. That's kind of what it boils down to on a lot of non-convention staff people that are on this Kick Fix side. But the ones that don't have a personal stake involved, there's quite a bit more history. Before Vic was levied all of his accusations, he's known throughout most of the convention, especially guest relations staff communities, which guest relations staff, I should quickly explain, are basically the convention staff that work with the guests, that keep them fed, transported, get them to their events on time. But anywho, amongst convention relations staff, Vic can be kind of a wild card. There's a lot of people that absolutely love him, that they're the only reason why they'll work this convention, so they can, you know, they can be close to Vic again and have a fun time. And then there's people that have not had good experiences. I can't quite go into detail about those. They don't really involve any illegal activity so much as just Vic being a party animal, kind of exciting personality, and it's kind of worn them out. And because of that, it's sort of, okay, well, you know, Vic's kind of he's worn me out at a lot of these conventions. He's been a bit of trouble, and for all these accusations to come out, I may as well jump on this train, because this just means I don't have to deal with Vic again. That's pretty much what it amounts to, and this has been going on for years. A lot of conventions have kind of just sucked it up because he's got a lot of very, very good fans. As convention attendees, he really inspires the attendees to all of the events he goes to. He's got an amazing personality.
Yeah.
And, conventions, we want to succeed, so they bring him in.
Oh, but yeah, for sure.
It's kind of stemmed from that. It's stemmed from, you know, I've dealt with Vic so long, I've had so many problems with him from this, and I just want to get rid of him, and this is a way to do it, basically.
I personally
have not been against relations from him, though, so I'm not saying this from my perspective, I'm saying this from others.
I see what you're doing. Have you ever worked with Vic before?
A very, very little, but my experiences have been positive.
Okay. When I had, we talked about this a while back, and a couple of weeks ago, I had Aiden Paladin on the show. We were talking a little bit about this Vic Mignogna thing. And she said that in her experience, and from what she's heard, the Vic can be a prima donna, but that's not the same as, you know, a pedophile rapist. So, or whatever it is they're accusing him of these days. So I mean, but just like anybody, and it, you know, so some people are going to like you, some people are going to not like you, whatever. So that's neither here nor there, like whether or not the guy is a nice guy. I think it's less relevant than whether or not he's guilty of what he's being accused of. So my understanding is that this whole thing started, and this is why I find that the accusation or the assertion that they don't like him because he is a Christian conservative or a evangelical born-again Christian. I think he's born again. I'm not really sure. I believe so, though. That goes back to the first thing that happened that snowballed into this entire, you know, now coming on $200,000, God knows how many hours of people talking on the internet about it, of YouTube channels, of Twitter arguments. It all started because Vic would not sign a piece of Yaoi fan art that somebody pushed in front of him, and his reasoning was that he doesn't sign non-canon work. And from that, they said he was a homophobe, and then they, you know, they tried to accuse him of everything under the sun. And so the fact that it comes from something so trivial and small is one of the main reasons why I side with him on this, because I've seen this kind of dogpiling before. And, you know, it's hard to believe that someone could be guilty of something as heinous as they're accusing him of now, when they could have done this, you know, what, a month ago when this whole thing started? So, okay. Anyway, this brings me to something else, because there, if this is true, that they're just trying to get rid of him because they don't like his politics, essentially, which I can see that happening, especially in the time of Trump. What I was thinking is that this reminds me of something else that I think is related, is the stuff that's going on in the animation industry that I've been trying to bring attention to for a while. And that is that there is a kind of co-opting going on where, you know, there are organizations working with unions to remove males, men who work in animation, to make room for women. And they're doing this at multiple levels. And it wouldn't surprise me if they were also trying to do it within voice acting as an industry, but they can't get rid of all of the men. So they just get rid of all of the men that have the wrong race, the wrong politics, the wrong sexuality, whatever. And they replace them with their people. This is all my speculation, and I can't vouch for any of this, but I think that there is something to it, because I've seen this happen and it's still happening. So I guess I just wanted to know what do you think about that? And also, like, what other sort of, like, you know, info can you guys share that would, like, maybe contribute to that idea, or even, like, contradict it? Because I'm willing to be wrong. So.
Yeah, well, I've actually got something interesting on this. I've been keeping up with a lot of the stuff connected to this for a little while because of the articles I write and all that. Well, apparently it's come out in Kiwi Farms forums, of all things.
Okay.
But apparently Clownfish TV, who we've talked to here in the past.
I'm sorry, real quick. Can I put that Kiwi Farms thing on the screen? Is that something I can put up?
Yeah, or? Sure. Sure. I think I sent you that link.
I got it. Okay, go ahead. It's not letting me. My connection is not private. All right, never mind. I won't open it.
All right. Well, in any case, basically Clownfish TV got some information that they didn't exactly go into depth on live about 6 months before this even started, that apparently Funimation, Crunchyroll, and Rooster Teeth were talking about cleansing the industry. And apparently, this is connected to that.
So cleansing the industry, what do you mean? So Rooster Teeth, Crunchyroll, and Funimation. These are all, I assume, these are the American sort of distributors, right? That have also been changed.
Licensors.
Licensors, okay. So essentially, they license the Japanese shows, and they're the ones that they're like the gatekeepers of what we get to see. Is that a fair way to put it?
So much. They're more of a
content creator,
producer.
Yeah, right. Because they do Ruby.
Funimation is they basically get stuff from Japan, and then they, you know, they sub it, dub it, license it, and handle all the merchandise.
Yeah, change what's being said in the Japanese language.
They do that, unfortunately.
Yes.
Yeah, and what I found particularly interesting about this timing was that was about the time some of the stuff with High Guardian Spice was coming forth.
Mm-hmm.
So quite likely, Margaret Dean, head of Elation Studios, who's producing High Guardian Spice, is involved, who is also the head of Women in Animation.
Yep, Margaret Dean, head of Women in Animation. is also the person heading up High Guardian Spice, which I talked about on a video that I did. And if you haven't seen it, you should definitely go check it out. I think it's called Is the Animation Industry Screwed? And it was a Week in Men's Rights episode I did about a month ago. And it was the one with Aiden. I wanted to show her everything I had to say and all of the info I had. And you should definitely check it out because, yes, the plot is thick with two C's. Okay, go on, Anime Moon.
Right. Well, with all of that entailed, now, I want to say, this is primarily speculation. We don't have 100% proof that Dean was in the actual talk.
Uh-huh.
So I want to be clear on that. However, it would make sense with their proposed goal of having a 50-50 representation by 2025 to have it be both in the animating side and the ADR side of various animation groups.
Okay. So, Ichigo, is there some other info that you want to share, something else that you think is very important and relevant?
Certainly. I can't confirm that Funimation, Crunchyroll are engaging in this sort of gender diversity quota thing going on, but I can confirm that they do have a political bias, both companies. And it's in the direction you would imagine.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, it's almost sort of against what Japan's principles are with voice acting and producing.
Isn't
Japan.
I think I heard something about Japanese companies that produce, you know, over there are actually not like unhappy with the ways that in which Funimation and Crunchyroll, but in particular, I guess Funimation mostly, are sort of treating their properties. I thought I read something about that somewhere.
One thing out there is Jamie Marchi, one of the accusers, has done the scripts for Prison School and Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid. In Prison School, they had to take out the line about Gamergate creep shows, but they kept the line in with the
Kobayashi's the Dragon Maid show
about the patriarchy bit, and when talks about it with the original creator of Dragon Maid, the original creator of Dragon Maid was furious over that. She viewed it as a absolute insult.
Yeah, sure.
I can't say I know exactly how Japan feels about their licensors over here in the West. I mean, obviously there's that, but as a whole, I do know that they're pretty quick to put down any sort of accusations or finger pointing when they're at Western conventions and at panels answering questions. Mm-hmm. Most notably, if you remember on Reddit not too long ago, the producer for Shield Hero, or Rising of the Shield Hero, which is a very recent anime, was on there, and someone I think brought up, you know, why is this anime got toxic masculinity about this, you know, this guy that's got a revenge fetish kind of going on from the first episode. I can't go into detail without spoilers. But the Japanese producer was basically quick to say, this is not a problem in Japan. We're going to continue producing it as it is. And basically what it was about is the main character gets into a lot of trouble from false accusations. And, you know, defensive people can be over false accusations. And the subject of it, the very subject of it alone can cause a bit of political strife over here. And that's basically what happened. And the Japanese producer was like, we don't have that sort of problem here. Kind of, they are pretty quick to shut it down. I find them kind of admirable to that, but they haven't really taken any strong action against Funimation and Crunchyroll for the insertion of political stuff into dialogue.
Yeah.
From one of the guest friends that I've talked to, who I'm going to keep anonymous for their sake, they've heard from some people that are connected to over in Japan that Toei is furious about all this happening. Because obviously Son Goku is going to be the ambassador for Japan in the Summer Olympic in the Olympics in 2020, and this tarnishes that image.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to get back to the convention scene because this is kind of new info.
Yeah.
So they're picking up ground. It appears their voices are getting louder. They're becoming more vocal. Are they making demands? Are there things that are being pushed? Like, you know, let's put aside the Vic case because, you know, he's lawyering up and I hope you guys contribute or donate if you can. We need every victory we can get. It'd be a pipe dream, but it'd be great to get Vic on to make his to talk. But, you know, it's probably best that he not talk to us anyway. It probably wouldn't work out for him. But so let's put that aside. Do you think that or do you see anything that looks like it could be like actual, let's say, changes that are being proposed or ideas that are being tossed around within the convention scene that could, do some kind of permanent damage, which I imagine if SJWs want to change anything, it always does permanent damage. But I just want to know, like, what are some of the symptoms of this growing concern that you have ultimately?
I have seen misinterpretations of convention rules when somebody that is biased is in charge of them. That is one thing that I am worried about, especially maybe taking too much action in a sense, or the listen and believe philosophy. You know, when a lot of conventions get complaints of sexual harassment and demands for protection, sometimes convention staff can go a little bit too overboard. I don't have any cases of this happening yet, but it's been talked about in some of my inner circles. And I the way I see this proposal or how it's proposed to be handled is a little frightening to say the least, because we really, when we do rule enforcement at conventions, we should be focused on an investigation, not necessarily picking a side immediately.
Right.
So I feel that this could become a problem in later years.
So are you saying that leftists are intentionally misinterpreting words and to get like their way? That's crazy. That never happens. They don't do that with words all the time.
We have rules in place that are impartial, though, but the people in charge of those can sometimes take those rules and apply their political bias to them.
Do the rules?
I guess it's sort of a human thing, but
yeah, but it's
simply not something that's prominent.
I guess the question I have is, are the rules worded in such a way that there's a bit of subjectivity? Like, for example, hate speech is not allowed. Let's say that's a rule. I don't know it is. It probably is. But let's say that was a rule. If you had the rule hate speech is not allowed, you're opening it up for people to essentially interpret it the way they want, and whatever their biases are going to get involved. Like, how do they define hate speech? Well, they might say that, you know, saying hello to a woman is hate speech. I mean, I'm exaggerating to make a point, but it's not that insane. I mean, they literally made talking to a woman in public without her permission illegal in Nottingham. So, because they said it's hate speech.
I apologize.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
A double entendre to that as well. The conventions that I work for don't really have any hate speech policies, but they do have rules that are enforced by their venues. One of the ones I work for is in a very progressive city, and the venue there has basically rules regarding hate speech, but it's more for stuff like you have something on your t-shirt that may be construed as hate speech. And at that point, we are obligated to tell their convention security staff to remove them from the property. That's sort of an unfortunate thing. That's usually what the genesis is for a lot of rules at conventions, especially involving weapons and props.
What was that, Anime Moon?
Oh no, he's wearing a Gamergate shirt.
Right. Or
thankfully, I haven't had any cases where I've had to answer anybody that's had Gamergate shirts. I've had people report to me that somebody was wearing a shirt that looked like that, though. But I mean, obviously, that's not hate speech. That's not something I can even really logically kick someone out for.
One thing. Sorry. One thing I can think of is an expansion on the cosplay is not consent rule of, oh, cosplay is not consent. I didn't say you can look at me.
Right. Yeah, no, there's definitely ways in which it gets exploited. And a lot of times it doesn't get applied equally. This is why I think having... When you write, I know that when people write up the kinds of like rules and regulations for their conventions or any other sort of, you know, festival or gathering or whatever, they might have, you know, like code of conduct rules, right? And I know that when they're made, they're usually made with the best of intentions. They're just thinking about what are, you know, sort of practical things that we should police. But the problem is that when people that have a bias, you know, ideological bias that they cling to, and they're also more likely to essentially react to what's around them by essentially just like, you know, trying to use authority to remove the offense, then they're going to interpret the rules in the way that is convenient for them because they want to make their convention a safe space. Okay, so I have a super chat I need to read out. Luga Wanshu gives us $5 and says, actual nerds don't care about social justice. This is why I stopped going to cons. It became unsaturated and unfun. When you say unsaturated, do you mean like overly saturated with like people? Or I don't know.
I think they do.
And then she writes, thankfully, tokusatsu hasn't been touched too much. I'm not really sure what tokusatsu is. Sounds like a con, maybe.
Kamen Rider, Super Sentai, that sort of thing.
Oh. Well, not yet.
Say we have our resident tokusatsu expert right here.
Okay, so anyway. So, like, okay, so they're talking about interpreting the rules differently. Let me ask you this. You guys know if anybody other than Vic Mignogna has had... Like, that's a voice actor in this sort of industry, has had any of this shit happen to him or her? Most likely him, if it happens. But.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Recently, Todd Haberkorn.
Todd Haberkorn?
Yes, Todd Haberkorn, who's also a friend of Vic's, has been accused by a cosplayer, Jesse Pridemore, of some of the same type of stuff. And interestingly enough, Jesse Pridemore is also one of the Kick Vickers. Todd Haberkorn is a friend of Vic Mignogna and has done a live action thing with Vic called Star Trek Continues, where Vic is Captain Kirk and Haberkorn is Spock.
I see. So Todd Haberkorn, just to reiterate, is a voice actor who's friends with Vic. He worked on Fairy Tail, and he was kicked off panel at ZenkaiCon by Monica Rial. He was also a voice actor on Attack on Titan.
Yeah, and also to bring Dragon Ball back into this, he's also the voice of Jakku.
Jakku? Is that what you said?
Jocko, the Galactic Patrolman.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm not caught. Is that from Super? Is that from Dragon Ball Super?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not caught up on Dragon Ball, but I believe you. So I think Ichigo wanted to say something. So why don't you you wanted to add something to this Todd Haberkorn thing?
Yes. In a sense, both the most recent accusations against Todd Haberkorn and Vic Mignogna have surfaced from a live Google Sheets document that basically was the genesis of the Me Too movement in late January 2019, which at first I thought was pretty admirable because they were trying their best to make sure that any of the accusations of people on this list that were accused, including guests and attendees that were accused of sexual harassment, were at least, you know, doubled up with facts and evidence. But it's become an issue of trust, even amongst the convention executive social circles, that, you know, it's not a list that we can entirely trust, because just about anybody can put any name on it, as far as we know. That's not to decrease any sort of credibility from it, though, but There's also, we don't know exactly who is moderating and providing all the evidence and verifying what's going on there. But that's kind of where a lot of this most recent controversy started, as far as I know, anyway. At least it, coming to the surface.
Okay. All right.
Are y'all aware of that particular Google Sheets doc?
No. Oh, wait.
I don't know.
Wait. What's it called? Is it?
There's a Kickvink Google Doc out there.
Oh no, I don't know about that. I may have heard something about it.
Previous articles.
Okay.
This one was not Vic specifically. It was just anyone that is at a convention, staff, guest, or attendee, or anyone really, vendor, artist, that can be accused or that has a history of any sort of sexual assault. Basically, usually from personal account at a convention. And I believe both Todd Haberkorn and Vic are on that list, but I believe the list has been since discontinued because of its inability, I guess the inability to kind of control what's going on there, because it's a lot of people got involved with it and it was kind of hard to manage the facts. Because obviously, you know, I mean, don't want to put anybody's name on a list just with hearsay alone, even though that's kind of what's going on with Vic right now. But
And I hate to say it, but I've even seen this sort of thing starting to brew even as far back as when I started going to conventions myself, which I started at 17, and that was about 15 years ago. Interestingly enough, that first convention I ever went to was IkazuCon in Cincinnati, and one of the guests was Monica Rial, who I met when she was wrestling one Jan Scott Frazier, and Ichigo, you should know why that's entertaining.
Oh yes,
why?
To a degree, anyway.
Let us in on this on the inside joke. Let us inside the joke. I'm trying to figure out if this guy
Jan Scott Frazier.
Go on.
Jan Scott Frazier is a transgender producer that works on anime.
Oh, okay. All right.
They're often a guest at conventions. A lot of fans, usually.
Yeah. Hmm. And speaking of older people with lots of fans, that's also where Amanda Wynn Lee can come in, because Amanda Wynn Lee is friends with both Frazier and Rial, as well as worked with one Brianna Wu.
That's concerning.
Yeah, and specifically on Revolution 60. And from everything I've been able to find out, Wynn Lee has been keeping in regular contact with Wu. Yeah, basically, I wouldn't be surprised if Monica Rial and Brianna Wu have met and talked, if that comes out down the road.
Mm-hmm.
I can't confirm it, obviously, but I wouldn't be surprised, since they're both such good friends with Amanda Wynn Lee.
Yeah. I want to go... Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
And, in fact, that might be indirectly where some of these tactics that Rial and others connected to the Kickvick side may have come from, because they've all talked with Amanda Wynn Lee.
So I looked up the that's all speculation. I mean, it's, you know, I don't want to
Of course
get too course much that. Too involved with that, but you know, it's something that we could like keep an eye out in case it comes out later. Then we can say, okay, saw that coming.
Called
right
it.
Yeah. So the person who accused Todd Haberkorn is someone named Jesse Pridemore, who I guess claims that she met him when she was a bright-eyed and bushy-tailed cosplayer about 10 years ago at the height of her cosplaying career. And then
in the middle of a divorce.
Yeah, and then there, I guess, I'm not going to read the whole, I was going to read it on, but it's like this long thing that probably reads like a bad romance novel. And that's usually how those go. So, all right. So anyway, so this guy's been accused as well, happens to be friends with Vic. And then we got all this stuff going on with let's say it is quite a tangled web, and it's hard to say how many threads are part of the same web. So, but it's definitely definitely weird. I could Christ Resan says the bitch said at 24 she didn't know what consent was. 24 and didn't understand consent. Funny. That is hilarious. I didn't know that. That's
that was hilarious.
Well, again, you know, innocent until proven guilty, but sure. Luga Ronshu gives us $2 and says, at the height of her thotting career. Yeah, I was thinking that it could have been a cosplay thought. They exist. There's lots of them. Okay, so anyways, we got about 10 minutes left. Is there anything else that we should know about this whole mess that you think is important or pertinent that maybe other people don't know?
Would you like me to start on that one? Because I got something to say.
Yeah, do it.
All right. So, in closing, kind of moving forward, going back to the Recieta Law video, some of the convention executives that I'm friends with kind of misinterpreted that as a threat to a lawsuit to a convention, even though it was clearly a threat of a lawsuit to people that were feeding misinformation to conventions. And that's kind of got a lot of convention execs. Yes. It's kind of got a lot of conventions on defense mode. I don't know why they didn't look into or actually watch the full videos that were linked. But I watched it entirely. I didn't really feel any sort of animosity towards conventions themselves. But I will say that some conventions are now adjusting a lot of their contracts to try and get out of any voice actors involved with controversies. That's kind of a bad stage you don't want to be on. I would say at this point, I mean, while lawsuits can and should happen, we should focus less on lawsuits and where we put our money and where we put our attendance. You need to attend conventions that you support. You need to pre-register for them, and you need to not attend conventions that are doing something you disagree with. That same goes for putting your money towards anime merchandise, at least from Western distributors that you disagree with. But a convention's attendance is kind of their hit points. There are a lot of really small conventions that are amazing and successful, but a lot of them kind of down low measure their success on numbers. And if conventions are losing those numbers from people from conventions taking sides on something they shouldn't be taking sides on, then they're going to take notice. And they're going to take some sort of action to either protect themselves, you know, reverse their poor ideologies and political biases, or crash and burn. So bear that in mind. Like Kamehameha-Con, you know, if you really support what they did, you need to attend. In other conventions that you don't support, don't attend them.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying don't go to most conventions except for the ones that support, you know, due process, the fans, instead of their own personal bias or their own political beliefs.
And I can say, at least with rule enforcement, that a lot of conventions lack that political bias. A lot of them enforce their rules pretty well. They're just a couple of bad apples here and there, and they're getting better, admittedly, but you need to pay attention to that stuff, see how conventions are addressing these issues, or if they're taking too much or not enough action.
Yeah, so I don't go to cons anymore at all because they look, if it has this, I'm a bit of a hardliner when it comes to this stuff, but if I see that a con, I'm not likely to go anyway, but if I become interested in going to one, let's say there's going to be some people there I want to meet or stuff that I want to get that I can't find anywhere else for whatever reason, if they have so I might be interested, but if I see a cosplay is not consent sign, I'm not going. Like I already know what that means. Like the odds that they're gonna, even though that would never affect me because I'm not the kind of person that would put myself in harm's way, but I think just like on principle, I won't go. Like I used to, for example, I used to love going to Gen Con. I used to go every year because I go with my friends and we get the weekend and we game all weekend, right? Gen Con was the big, it used to be in Wisconsin. Now it's in Indianapolis. And I used to go all the time. Then I couldn't go for a while because my time was taken up by other stuff. But I still wanted to go. I kind of had like the craving to go. Then last year, I think it was, they had Anita Sarkeesian there as guest of honor. And I was like, I'm never going to Gen Con again. Never.
Not to mention what happened.
I remember what happened with the quartering. I don't think I'd ever go to Gen Con either after what happened.
Oh, no. He shouldn't. No, I mean, like that should never happen. That sort of stuff should not. Yeah, and if it does, because when you have like a lot of people in one place, something's going to happen. But if it does happen and you don't treat people like the way, like in a legal way, like that, like there was no justice done there. And then, yeah, no, you've just, I'm never going to go to that con again. And I'm going to ask that people I know not go either. And I'm just going to say, well, why am I spending, you know, $300 for a hotel room and whatever the cost of a ticket is for like the 3-day pass, which is like another $100+ plus food, just to go over there and play games where I can just stay home and play games with my friends and just have them. We'll just go meet someplace and do it for nothing. So, I mean, like the one thing that I liked going to Gen Con for was trying new stuff and meeting new people. But no, they did. They showed me what they believe and I don't believe it. And why should I give them my money? So that's just my opinion. But I think that you guys, if you want to support Vic, you should think about it the same way. If Vic is like, we have a couple anime conventions in Chicago or in the Chicagoland area. If there is one, which I highly doubt, but if there was one that supported him and had him come on as a guest, then I would consider going just to show them, you know, because I think it's that important, even though I would not be interested otherwise. I would go just to show my support for what they're doing. But otherwise, I won't go, no. I don't have to, so.
One thing I would like to suggest and put out there is, if there's not a convention in your area that you would support or anything like that, try making your own. It is possible. I've helped do it before. Mm-hmm. It is definitely
a mountain
possible.
Of hard work, though, but it is possible, yes. And it's so easy to make one since conventions are still a kind of booming culture.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, and you know what? If you're the only person that does it in your area and there's enough interest, it could blow up really fast. So think about that. It's like, if it's like a desert where you are and there's people craving it.
Yeah, yeah. I remember the first year of OMG Con, which I helped start, that we had gotten a letter from the vice chair of ACON in Texas, if memory serves. And that letter said, why did you choose the same weekend that we are holding our great convention here in Texas? And the general response was, well, we wanted to have fun.
Yeah. There you go. All right. So it is 5:58. We might as well just wrap it up. So do you guys, I'm going to see if there's any other super chats. I do want to pitch one thing. There is one con that I think you guys should totally go to, and that is the ICMI 2019 in Chicago. It's going to be the tits. There's going to be a lot of really great people there. There is no, we don't have consent laws, and you know what? No one, I've never thought about it this way, but maybe people could cosplay their favorite imagery from Honey Badger Radio or the MRM or whatever. If somebody wants to go, I think I might go as Tom Golden. I don't know. Maybe I'll do that.
It would be hilarious to see someone dressed as Karen.
I think Karen's going to be going as Karen. But yeah, so it's going to be it. We're going to have ICMI 2019 this August. I believe it's 16th through 18th. There's still tickets available. Go check it out. That's going to be a convention for the ages. And it's only going to get bigger from there. This one is going to be the biggest one yet. And there's going to be, like I said, a lot of really great folks there. Maybe somebody will dress up as Badger Chan. I've been trying to get... I got somebody that's really interested in doing a costume, and I think she'd be great. as the sort of our sub mascot of HBR. So consider doing that. All right. So I've done my shill for the ICMI. Now, again, I'll let you guys have your final thoughts on this whole thing. Anything you want to communicate to the people watching?
I think my head's just blown with a thought of a horde of Karens.
Okay.
I don't have much to add. Just thank you for having me.
No, thank you guys for coming on. And thank you guys for watching. I guess now our conversation is over. So why don't you guys continue? So please leave us a comment in the low bar. Tell us what you think about this situation. And with regards to whatever we've discussed today, we definitely covered a lot of ground. And I want to also ask you guys again, if you haven't already hit that like button, be sure to subscribe to the channel and hit the bell for notifications. I want to thank my guests, Ichigo and Anime Moon, for coming on and talking to us more about this Vic Mignogna situation. And until then, we're going to go into the after show. If you want to be a part of that, you got to become a Badger at feedthebadger.com. So go to feedthebadger.com, start a monthly subscription. You can join us in the after show where we'll continue the conversation. Today's show will be done in Direhawk's Den, so it'll be available to everyone. You don't have to have a special level to get in it. So hopefully we'll see you guys there. Thanks for coming on. I'll talk to you guys later. Have a great evening, everybody.